So glad you're here.
That was good.
I know.
Yeah, I heard.
All right, good evening, everybody. We're gonna get started even as people continue to roll in. I'm Christine Rolfes. I'm your county commissioner. And I want to explain a little bit about what we're doing here tonight. First of all, thank you for this great turnout. And hopefully as people roll in, we can plug them into places so people don't have to stand for the whole meeting. We are presenting to you, the community of Kingston, information that you might need for conversations that are constantly happening in Kingston about whether you want to incorporate or not. The goal from the county perspective, Kingston is an urban growth area under the state law, and that is because of our ferry access and our transit access here. As part of being designated an urban growth area, the people who live here have the choice of whether you want to stay in unincorporated Kitsap County or you want to form your own small city. In Kingston, you'd probably be more considered a town, but under state law, you'd be defined as a city. And the county is obligated to present people with the information that you might need to make that decision, because that's the state law. And so I've been your county commissioner for 3 years now, and almost every time I'm at an event in Kingston, there's a little bit of talk about, we want to incorporate, we don't want to incorporate, we like what the county did, we don't need to incorporate, we hate what you guys just did, we need to incorporate South Control. So what I wanted to do was present you all with this information. So we put a little bit of money in the 2025 budget to do an analysis for you. It's not a pro or a con. The county doesn't have a position. It is the information, the information that people here need to start that conversation. And we were lucky because we had a company bid on this project, and it wasn't a lot of money, who is probably the premier group in the state helping small cities and counties do this kind of work. So I am delighted to introduce them to you. And the way that we've structured the evening is that they're going to do a presentation of their findings for about 20, 25 minutes. And then we have just question and answer to get make sure everything that you want to know while these experts are here, you can ask. So this isn't like a town hall debate about whether to incorporate or not. It's the opportunity to get the information that you might be interested in. And if you're like an economics data junkie, there's a lot of really interesting stuff in this presentation. So we have the room until 8. We'll try to end by 7:45, hopefully get folks' questions answered. We can stick around for a little bit afterwards. But Chris and I are going to we have to put a lot of chairs away before 8 o'clock. So did I hit it all? All right, I'm going to turn this over to Michaela and Ethan to introduce themselves and then to run through the findings that they came up with. I also want to say that Chris Cooley from, he's in Kitsap County Commissioner's Office, he's our senior policy analyst. He and I had a debate this afternoon about how many copies of the presentation to make, and we landed on 25 and we ran out. So I apologize to folks who wanted a copy and don't have one. But everything is online, and if you're not online, we can find a copy and mail it to you. So it's our goal to get this information to people in Kingston. And I'm going to turn this over to Michaela.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Michaela Jellico. I'm a senior economist with Community Attributes, and as Mr. Rolfes said, we were tasked with completing this introduction to a feasibility study for the community of Kingston.
Chris, do you?
Oh, the worker's right there on the table.
Excellent, thank you. All right. Okay, so we're going to go through tonight a little bit of an introduction, an overview of the study area, some findings from a very high-level boundary analysis, discussion of our revenue and expenditure analysis, and we have some comparison, incorporation comparisons, and a few other considerations, and then as Commissioner Rolfes said, we'll have time for Q&A. All right, so I think this is a little bit of a repetition, but I just want to sort of set the stage a little bit here. This study is not a formal initiation of an incorporation process. No petition has been filed to our knowledge, and that would be a requirement of a petition by a citizen of the community of Kingston. It's not a recommendation or determination, so we won't be telling you one way or the other with any of this. This is just information to help you make a decision. And it doesn't mean there's inevitable change. So it could mean that you go away and just stay the way you are for however long, or you could go forward and think more about incorporation. Our objectives of this study, our scope of work was to identify current service providers and the costs for the community of Kingston to the extent possible, assess the capacity to generate revenue, summarize some comparable cities and costs so that you, so when we don't have information specific to Kingston, we can give you an idea of what that might look like, and then provide some high-level boundary analysis. So this is the urban growth boundary. Currently, this area inside the black line is the only area that's eligible to incorporate. There is a process that you can change the urban growth boundary, but this is the area that we're studying right now. So this area is 1,400 acres approximately, has a population of a little more than 2,600, about almost 1,300 housing units and 1,100 employees jobs as of 2024. And I'm going to pass it over to Ethan to give you more information.
Thanks, Michaela. My name is Ethan Schmidt. I'll be walking through the rest of the presentation with you all. So first with that boundary analysis, under the default Washington state law, any area that's within 5 air miles of a larger city with at least 15,000 residents is not eligible to incorporate. So that's why we have this big map on here. You guys are located about 4.25 air miles from Edmonds. So you would not be eligible to incorporate under default Washington state law. However, in 2023, House Bill 1620 was passed, which removed the air miles rule and lowered the incorporation threshold to 1,500. So until June 30th, 2028, Kingston is eligible to incorporate. After that time, they would have to wait until residents has grown up or population has grown beyond 3,000, or they could consider expanding the boundary of that nature. So something to keep in mind. Now for the rest of the boundary analysis, what we're looking for here was, is there any kind of viable revenues being left on the table near the UGA boundary that would be providing revenues without a proportionate cost associated with providing services to those areas? So the first thing we did was looking at just general land use. A bit tough to see on this map, but the parcels that we're most interested in are the light blue, which represent commercial space. So this would be potential sales tax revenues, B&O taxes, things of that nature. As you can see, there's not a lot of commercial uses in this area. The most, the closest commercial uses nearby the UGA, outside of the UGA, is off the highway of 104. So what we took away from this map is there's no significant revenue sources just kind of sitting just outside the UGA boundary.
Could you turn the lights off?
One second.
Screen a little.
We can look at this map a little bit longer with the or lighting.
Is that better?
There we go. We can see the light blue now, right? Very small little bit in downtown Kingston and then off of Highway 104 there in the top center of the map. All right. We also looked at assessed value per acre by parcel. You can see there's quite a bit of exempt land within the UGA, so that's going to be public land, utilities, things of that nature that would be exempt from property taxes. But generally, the whole area around the UGA is quite uniform, with an exception of kind of higher per acre assessed values along the shoreline. From this map, we also took that there's not really any kind of revenues being left on the table that wouldn't come with a proportionate increase in cost. If you were to include some of those higher per acre assessed value parcels, you would have to provide service to those areas. So it's an increase in acreage you have to provide services to, but also population. So it's likely just going to come with a proportionate increase in total costs. And lastly, population density. A very similar takeaway here. It's most efficient for local governments to provide services to urban areas, or dense and urban areas. All of the population density, for the most part, just falls within the UGA. Anything outside of that would come with a proportionate increase in cost. So the takeaway from our battery analysis is the UGA, as it stands right now, is not leaving any kind of really promising revenue sources on the table just outside that current area. So now I'm going to talk a bit about the revenue and expenditure analysis. So we started with a comparison city analysis. The way we do this is, for a study like this, it's really important to kind of try to benchmark what Kingston might look like if it were to incorporate. It's very small. It has very unique characteristics, so it's hard to find an exact match. But we found these five selected cities here on the screen to kind of give us an idea of what Kingston might look like in terms of revenues, expenditures, and also levels of service that you might be trying to accomplish. So we selected Friday Harbor, Westport, McCleary, Tenino, and Coopville. We considered things such as population, housing units, employment, taxable retail sales, assessed values, and things of that nature to come up with those. So these five cities are very reliant on taxes to fund their general government. This is very common for Washington cities. The two biggest revenue sources are primarily property taxes and sales use taxes. For these smaller cities, they're not quite as reliant on those two tax sources. They rely also on business and occupation taxes and utility taxes. Those are a bit less common. B&O taxes are only levied by about 54 of Washington's 281 cities. And then utility taxes are not always levied because they typically are passed on to the consumer. So households don't pay more taxes, essentially. We can see here, taxes represent about 60% to 84% of these small cities' general fund revenues. Kind of level set and understand where Kingston might fall within these five cities. We have some tables up here showing total and per acre assessed value, and then taxable retail sales per capita. What these charts are telling us are that Kingston's going to likely be more reliant on property taxes over sales tax. As you can see, their per acre assessed values are kind of near the middle of the road of the five cities, and their per capita taxable retail sales are quite low. That makes sense with the small commercial area that we saw on the maps earlier. So it tells us that Kingston would be more reliant on those property taxes over sales and use tax and might have to get creative in ways to kind of bump up the revenues in the general fund. So property taxes are always a hot topic when we talk about incorporation. So current households in Kingston pay about $9 per $1,000 of assessed value in property taxes. This includes a whole slew of levies, state school, county general, library, fire, things of those nature. And the only tax levy that would change if you were to incorporate would be the county roads tax, which is highlighted there in the table, which currently represents about 81 cents per $1,000 of assessed value, or only about 9% of your total property tax levy. Why that is significant? People always want to know, if we incorporate, are my taxes going to go up? And we put together this chart. I know there's a lot of numbers on there, but bear with me here. So if you were to increase that county roads tax, which would be levied by the city if Kingston were to incorporate, a 25% increase in that rate would take it from around 81 cents to a dollar. But that's only going to represent about $100 to $150 of an average Kingston household's total property tax bill per year. So these numbers are pertaining to an average Kingston home, which is assessed at about $565,000 in 2025. If you were to decrease that rate, take it from 81 cents to about 60 cents, that 25% decrease is only going to lower your bill by about $100 to $150 per year, which comes out to about a 2% swing in total property taxes per year. So when people talk about it, they say, oh, our rates are going to go up by 25%. We need to remember that's just a very small portion of total property tax rate. Yes, more taxes are more taxes, but that's always something that people get stuck on. You want to make sure that it's understood that taxes may go up, they might go down, But generally, it's not as big of an impact as it sounds if you look at just the percentage of the rate that were would be impacted by the incorporation. Now for expenditures. So currently, Kitsap County provided services on the left there would become the responsibility of a hypothetical incorporated Kingston. So those include core government functions, public safety, specifically police, not fire and EMS, that's handled by a separate district, planning and development, roads and transportation, parks and recreation, sewer and sanitation. And these services can be provided directly by the city government, or they can be provided through contracts, which we'll talk a bit more about on the next slide. And then services that remain unchanged include fire and EMS, library services, public transit, water, garbage, electricity, utilities. These are currently provided by independent agencies with their own funding mechanisms, so they remain unchanged if Kingston were to choose to incorporate. So key expenditures for small cities or cities in Washington in general. The largest line item is typically going to be law enforcement. You can see that with the share of total expenditures in the chart on the right there. You can see it's about 20%, it's up to about 64% in total general fund expenditures. So this is a good example of how contracting services can save small cities money. Friday Harbor and Coopville both contract out their police services to their county sheriff. We spoke to the county sheriff as a part of this work. They sounded very interested in providing sheriff services to an incorporated Kingston, the community where you choose to go that way. And then you can also contract services such as community and economic development or planning services. McCleary has no cost for that in 2024, and that's because they contract out those services, and they deemed in 2024 that they didn't need any have any need for those services. So there's ways to save money for small governments through contracting those services. So here's just the budget balances for each of these small five cities. You can see they're all bound or operating in a roughly balanced budget or a budget surplus. Using some of their per capita estimates alongside property tax and sales tax revenues that we generated or estimated using data from the Department of Revenue, specifically for Kingston, we came up with some very high level ranges for what revenues and expenditures might look like for an incorporated Kingston. Again, they're very high level. I know if a more in-depth study would be needed to kind of hone in what level of service would be able to be received for the costs that are being spent or the revenues being generated. But our estimates came to about $1 to $2 million for estimated revenues. You can see they increased to about $4.3 million with utility taxes. Again, we never include that as a baseline assumption in our work because that would imply an increase in taxes to the households. And that would be a community decision and nothing, something that the community has to decide if they're interested in that. And then expenditures are ranging from roughly $1 million to $4.3 million. And the large swing in this is caused by the law enforcement. It's coming from those small cities that are providing their own police services versus those small cities that are contracting out services. And that's why you see that big swing. And I know those are very wide ranges, but what those tell us is it's feasible if Kingston were to incorporate, but at what circumstance, it would be hard to tell. Would you be able to provide the same level of service without an increase in taxes? We're not able to hone in on that with this level of analysis, but the community could make decisions and decide what is important to them and feasibly operate a balanced budget. So we spoke a bit about recent incorporations or other incorporations. The most recent one was in 2003. It was by a city much, much larger in Spokane Valley with 83,000 people. So there's not a lot of recent experience on how this goes for small cities, but there is a study conducted for Spokane Valley before they chose to incorporate that is publicly available online if anyone's interested in what the full study might look like or how people are making decisions off those studies. And then lastly, we have other considerations. So currently planning in Kingston is undertaken by the county. The counties generally have kind of broad density allowances that are intended to demonstrate long-term capacity for growth rather than driving near-term urbanization. If Kingston were to incorporate, cities planning under GMA, the Growth Management Act in Washington, are required to accommodate quite a bit higher levels of growth and be much more intentional with their zoning and proving that they have capacity in the short term to provide enough space and housing for the housing allocations that they would ultimately receive from commerce. So essentially what that's saying is they would be expected to grow more quickly or Kingston would be expected to become more dense more quickly if it were to choose to incorporate. And that's kind of all we have for you. We can move on to questions now.
So we were discussing earlier, I think that we can do this by people raising their hand, and I can walk around with a microphone. And let's try it that way.
Yeah.
So we'll get started. We'll start over here, and then we'll work our way around the room. So I'll start here.
Thank you. The 25% that you pointed to, is that just a benchmark and expect an increase in property taxes throughout the incorporation process?
No, that's an arbitrary number just to illustrate that a very large increase in that one rate produces a very small impact on total property tax. So a common question from people is, how much would my taxes go up if we were to choose to incorporate? So just an illustration, there's no expectation it would be a community decision on what property tax levy they would want to set. So,
yeah. And there are limits on how high you can
yes.
go. So okay. It is capped. I think it's $1.60 per thousand is as high as you could go. Mm-hmm.
Bill Williams, Lamberton, Kitsap County, from another state. I'm an immigrant to another state, to the south of us, which is where I'm named. God landed me here because I had a fresh 2-year-old grandson with leukemia at the time, so access to the ferry was an absolute godsend. My first reaction in seeing this post on Nextdoor was, why incorporate Kingston? Cui bono? Who benefits? I see very simply an added level of government. We don't need new municipal bureaucracies and departments, new municipal ordinances, regulations, inspections, enforcement, and who knows what else. New municipal licenses, permits, and fees for both. New delays in awaiting approval of licenses and permits. A foot in the door municipal property tax increase. Opportunities for new levies and bond measures. Just look at Silverdale as an example of a thriving unincorporated community, the retail and commercial hub of Kitsap County, with appealing residential neighborhoods, parks, access to Kitsap's wonderful outdoors, all accomplished without incorporation. What would incorporation do to make a better place to live? And there was one line on there that I saw, just jotted down. What is scary is the unforeseen local government decision-making.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
What we're going to try to do is get questions for the consultants while we have them here, because they're the only ones that know these answers, and they can point us to other places to find the answers. But I think your question, your rhetorical question was, why? And that's not their question to answer. So let's see.
Good evening. Thank you for all the effort that you did. It's very interesting information. I was just wondering, you spoke pretty extensively about Kingston being reliant on property taxes. And then, you know, you have a lot of information comparing us to these other cities. And I see on your slide 11 and 12 talking about taxes versus other revenue sources. And then, but what I'm noticing is the taxes are all lumped together. And you're saying that Kingston is more reliant on property taxes, but we can't really see from these two slides which taxes these other comparable cities are reliant on. Are they also reliant on their property taxes, or are they relying on the other ones? Do you have that information available online or something?
It's published in the full report.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will say off the top of my head, I don't think any of them actually have the single highest line item is property taxes. A couple of them are very reliant on utility taxes. One's very reliant on sales and use tax, and then I think another on B&L. So their property taxes represent a large share.
Can we go louder and clearer, please?
And what is B&L?
Business and occupation.
Okay.
So what I was saying, sorry, is I don't think any of these five cities actually have their single highest line of revenues in their general fund is property tax. A couple of them are more reliant on utility taxes and B&O taxes, and then one is most reliant on sales taxes. So that would be part of the decision. What can Kingston get for their property tax and then sales taxes? Would they want to introduce taxes that necessarily might increase cost to consumers or households? And that's why we don't include B&O tax or utility taxes in our baseline assumptions.
Thank you.
And in the full report, there's more detailed analysis.
My question is on the revenue side of the calculations. We have a large approved development called Arborwood that has not yet been built out. What was the assumption on the revenue side for that? Was it the revenues based on full build out or based on the current?
It should have been based on the current. It wouldn't have any, okay. We didn't model any assessed values for unbuilt property and okay. What that might
be. That's only like built down by like 5-10%.
720 new houses.
That would be, if we were to do a more in-depth study, that would be something we would want to consider.
Yeah.
Let's just pass it.
Hi, the very last thing you spoke about was that if incorporation happened, there would be a requirement for growth to increase more quickly. Is that a GMA requirement that cities versus county areas have that? What does that mean?
Yeah, so cities have different planning requirements compared to counties. And I think that Commissioner Rolfes can speak to this probably very well also. But cities are now given, and they have been for a long time, they're allocated a portion of the population, anticipated population and housing unit growth within the county. So all cities in the county are allocated a certain amount of that growth, and cities are intended to take on higher density of that growth compared to unincorporated areas, which are more preserved as less dense areas. So what that means functionally is that cities have to do a higher level of planning for growth compared to unincorporated urban growth areas.
I have a follow-up to that. I think in the comprehensive plan, Kingston is still listed as being required 130% growth under our comprehensive plan. The closest city to us is with that level of growth in the North County is 25% requirement in Paulsbo as a city currently. And I don't remember what Bainbridge is, but Silverdale also unincorporated 50% requirement. So I don't know how this plays out given how high the requirement for our area is under our county comprehensive plan. 130% is a lot.
What I can say about that is that the state has laws for cities where the state overrides local zoning choices. And so, for example, single family zoning isn't allowed in a city at this point. It's got to be more dense, and Kingston still has single family housing is allowed. It's dense, but it's allowed. So there's like nuances that if
for building,
yeah. And Bainbridge is fighting about that right now, right? Because they've got tons of land, but they're a city.
The state won't allow us to build a single family home right now?
No, they will allow single family homes under either law, but the zoning isn't allowed. So you, where we currently have like one house per acre or one house per quarter acre, if you're a city, that's not dense enough. So the point I think is that when you're talking about incorporation, you're gonna need to know like what's different about the zoning laws for city versus unincorporated urban growth areas, because there are nuances.
It sounded like you said you can, but you can't. So I don't understand.
There's a difference between building something and the way it's zoned. And so in the cities in the state have different zoning requirements under state law.
So I can build a single family home, but I can't live in it because the state won't let me zone it.
No, you can live and build, you can build and live in single family homes.
Oh, we can't.
They're just being closer together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a much free.
There's, I think the takeaway I want to leave it with, because this is so nuanced and I'm, I don't want to mess it up, is that when you're talking about incorporation, you want to be really clear about your zoning laws and what the city is required under state law and what unincorporated urban growth area is allowed to your state law. There's a lot of overlap, but there's also a lot of differences. All right. Next. Go ahead. Anybody on this side before I jog over?
I was looking forward, well, what you're presenting here would be the first step. When a town or a city wants to grow because they need a bigger tax base to support what they're doing, they start looking at annexation as a possibility. We're a bit landlocked here. We've got water on one side, can't do anything about that. We've got two reservations that are nearby. We probably can't do anything about that. So have you looked into any projections as to, in the future, what the revenues could look like over time if we needed to grow?
Sure. We did not do that as a part of this scope of work. That would certainly be a follow-up that you would need to do should there be continuing interest in incorporation. I think that one important thing in that conversation is how have your assessed values grown? So pointing out the future development of 700 units, if that's within the urban growth boundary, that presents an opportunity for having increased assessed values to have property tax generation from. If you see growth in like commercial areas as well, that's an important consideration. I will say though that with the 1% limit on property tax growth over time, if we're projecting out, you know, like city revenues over time rather than just what it would look like if you started at a future date, that growth is limited except for by the addition of new development. So that's an important consideration for like longevity of city funds, and is something that's presenting challenges for cities right now. So your growth is sort of, your revenue growth is capped in a way that your expenditures are not. But you know, your starting point is going to depend on, you know, when there's further interest in your growth rates that you're seeing.
All right, I'm going to call on Steve because I know he doesn't need a microphone.
Okay, wow. can you help us understand, because it's a little muted in your display here, what some of our comparator towns or cities have in terms of their public safety staff, when we talked about contracting it out versus their own police department. How big are those departments? What level of coverage do they have? Is it an officer, two officers, how frequently? And then also, can you talk about the differences in the way they manage their roads and their infrastructure versus the way it is done right now within unincorporated part of town?
So I don't have all that information off the top of my head. We did look at law enforcement coverage for those five jurisdictions, notably the two that contract in their county the sheriffs, have lower levels of service. I believe it came out to about between 1 and 3 officers per 1,000 residents. So essentially what it would be is one patrolling officer 24/7, and then access to additional county sheriff as needed. For most jurisdictions, in some cases there might be two. So it's pretty negligible in terms of the difference in level of service in terms of a 24/7 patrol. Remind me the second part of your question, sorry.
Yeah, so in terms of infrastructure, for example, like road planning, maintenance, traffic signage, lights, parking regulations, all of those things, can you just talk a little bit about the difference between how you can manage it as a locality versus, I don't know, an incorporated area?
I think the main difference that you're going to experience functionally is the level of localized input that you have into defining that level of service. So, you know, you have that input right now with Kitsap County. It's just a much larger and more dispersed area compared to Kingston. And in some cases, those cities are contracting that work out, which means that in effect, it's really not that different than you're experiencing right now. Versus if they're doing it on their own, you might see higher costs, but you may see, you know, more localized level of service, I suppose. It kind of depends on each community's needs, and it's very hyper-local. So I think the main difference is the level of localization of input.
So I see running a city kind of like running a business. And you can run a business that has a really good gross profit margin. But really what matters is the net. So you're comparing us to like Friday Harbor. Well, Friday Harbor has this huge influx of outside people, and they're pretty much a captive audience once they get there. There's only one place to buy it, is there. Now, in some businesses, when the net isn't covering the cost of doing business, the owner of the business may contribute some money and try to save his ass. But, you know, that can't be sustainable for very long. So the other thing is you need to figure out how to generate more other revenue. So you either charge the people that are the property owners more tax, or you get your businesses to generate more revenue to help this thing out. But, you know, we're in a situation, we're not like Friday Harbor. We have people, yes, we have a ferry, but we have people that get off the ferry and just drive out of town. You know, we're passing through. And the same thing coming back. You know, they're held up at the ticket booth to get their chip from the kiosk, and then they can drive directly down to the ferry dock and not pass go and not collect $200 and not go to a business because they're zooming down to the toll booth. So, you know, comparing us to something like Friday Harbor isn't a good example. And also, you know, I would like to see penciled out the actual, what does it cost? What would it cost Kingston? You know, what's our property taxes? How much does it cost for police protection? What's our infrastructure cost? The whole thing. Because just a bunch of numbers up there in this percentage, really, it's not apples to apples. Kingston is not an apple to Friday Harbor. Friday Harbor is an orange. And I don't know what about the other communities, the Coopville, everything else. I don't know what their infrastructure is, how their businesses are set up, that whole thing. So it's kind of a not a really good explanation to show us a bunch of numbers from other cities.
Do you want to respond to that at all? Is there more information in the report?
And I think,
just speak loud, because if I have to keep doing this, we'll run out of time.
Yeah, so I think that's why we showed the five cities. Obviously, none of those are a perfect match for Kingston, but given the scope of this work as well, this is just an introduction to what a feasibility study might look like. If we were to conduct a full study, we would map those things out, go line item by line item. How much would law enforcement cost? How much would property tax revenue generate? How much would sales tax revenue? Is there any lodging tax, things of that nature? So that's kind of the next step in the conversation of what exactly would it cost. This was just a preliminary. Here are five cities. None of them are a perfect match, but it should give us a range of high and low on what Kingston might be able to achieve. And that's what we're able to provide in this report.
All right, thank you. My name's Tony Clark. I'm actually the owner of one of those businesses downtown. And yes, a lot of visitors do drive through. We do get a lot of visitors that stop. So my question is more around when you talk about sources of revenue, whether it's property taxes or sales taxes, have you looked at, you know, again, this is all theoretical, but what if we had more businesses downtown? You know, we have empty storefronts, we have lots in the downtown area. We have buildings in the downtown area that could be further developed. So what if we had more businesses in the downtown area? How does it change that revenue picture? Does it bring us more revenue so that maybe we don't have to raise property taxes?
So that specific question was outside of our scope of work for the study, but that's certainly something that you could explore. That would look a little bit like taking the taxable retail sales, which is in the report online, and modeling what it would look like if you increased that. You know, if we were to come and do sort of a phase two, we would probably want to sort of look at the commercial area that you have, think about how that could look like, look at trends that you've had over time in taxable retail sales, to be able to model a reasonable scenario of what it would look like.
In your revenue streams from retail
sales
or whatever?
Yeah, we do have data on what you generate right now in taxable retail sales, and then even I don't know if you calculated out what a percentage with the tax would be. I think you did. It's in the report. Like
it should be in the report. We have
how much sales tax do you generate right now?
So there's more specific information about how much is generated right now in the Irving Road area.
Yeah.
The more detailed report.
Yeah.
So if people are talking about revenue and cost benefit, but doesn't incorporation it at its basic level require, just like the gentleman up front was talking about, that we have to have a whole level of our own city government of hired people, whether it's a mayor and all that, so we have a whole other level? And why would we want that? But anyway, report, and I'd love to look at the full report as far as these different small cities. You can't contract out everything, and then that's an interesting component as well. It's like we are already getting a lot of these services, and contracting it, I don't think will save an incorporated city any money. So in your report or in full report for the small cities, do they have a level of all the employee or the city government of what that would entail and how many employees?
I don't remember either.
We don't remember exactly if we included staffing levels, but we did speak to certain levels of service and what services are contracted and not. So we touch on the idea that you can't contract everything and you have to stand up a small city government of your own people regardless, and how that can be not the most cost-effective thing for small cities, but I don't think we got overly specific with staffing levels for each of these cities.
And I just have a question. This is more for you, Christine. We already have a partial government here called Port District, do we not?
We have Port District, and you have a Metropolitan Park District.
Okay. We have three elected officials in the Port District.
Right.
We have staff at the Port District, and, right, and they make certain decisions about the community here, do they not?
Yes, they do about on Port
There's
property.
A budget and funding for that Port District, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we're already paying for a partial government of some sort that makes decisions for us. To some extent, correct?
It's your the government system here is dispersed. So you have the Port of Kingston. You have the Village Green, the Metropolitan Park District that runs this. You have a separate fire district, which is bigger than Kingston, but North Kitsap. You have your own school district. You have a countywide library, Kitsap PUD, right? So some cities have their own fire department.
So we our property taxes that we pay today would pay for that, correct?
Yes, and I want to move on to other people, Tony. But to clarify, if you go back to the slide that showed the property taxes, and I only know this because I read the report a few days ago, so I have a head start on y'all. If you were to incorporate, you're still paying that whole column of taxes for different local governments. What goes away is the county road. You're still paying the county general. Like people in Holmesbo pay that 62 cents. That pays for the courts and the sheriff and the prosecutor and all the kind of shared countywide expenses. What goes away is county road. And then what they were showing was how much money the average person pays for the county road fund out of in Kingston, and that you could, like, if you switch that over, that's kind of what you have for city government without paying more taxes. That's like your you know, no increase, no decrease, about 80 cents. So that's the that's what you would have for your mayor, your council, your district court, like that whole thing. So that was the point of this, was also to show you none of these other taxes go away. This is all all the different government entities here that are supporting Living Here. All right, more?
Yeah, I just have more of a procedural question. So, Christine, maybe this is more for you, I'm not sure. What does the actual process of petitioning, petitioning further assessments, decisions, like, what does that look like?
I want to ask if Michaela knows the answer to that.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you at a very high level, but I think that we included this in the report. So at a very high level, an individual, a citizen of the community, can put together a petition. This goes to your county legislative authority, and then it goes through the boundary review board. And the purpose of that is to make sure that the boundary makes sense, that you're not, you know, that there's nothing strange going on. Sometimes there will be like a donut and weird boundary things that people want to do. So the boundary review board looks through that, make sure that everything makes sense. And then within that process, there's several public meetings. You have to go out and collect signatures. I think it's 10% of eligible registered voters of the urban growth boundary within the boundary that you're proposing for incorporation. And then at the very end, it goes to a vote, a public vote at a special election. And that's a majority vote. So one way or the other, a simple majority passes or fails.
Yeah, so looking at the boundary map, is my understanding that you're saying that's the urban growth area, and so that's the default or initial starting point for trying to understand what cities and the town of Kingston would be. But by golly, it's missing like Safeway and all business around that. Not that it matters, it doesn't include nearby fire station, but it's missing Safeway as another commercial growth area. And so, and it's also, it's missing parts of Washington Boulevard. It's very uniquely shaped. And so it would be interesting to understand the part of the discussion of like, can we change the borders to include a few more homes, a few more properties?
I mean, the answer is yes. So we weren't scoped to do tons of scenarios, but you can look at a variety of scenarios to see what it would look like, you know, revenue wise. When we went through this, we recognized that the commercial center with the Safeway isn't included. That's because of you have to have a contiguous boundary. So you'd be adding a large amount of relatively low density space to your urban growth boundary to get that small commercial area into the urban growth boundary. So our assessment of that is that adding that in, probably it's highly likely that it would increase your costs more than the gain of the revenue from that commercial area. Now you have to provide those urban level of services or city level of services to that entire area to capture that commercial area. So there is a mechanism that you can explore changing the boundary for the process of incorporation, if that's something the community wanted to explore. But just from our very preliminary review, there aren't any very obvious areas that are nearby that are contiguous with the urban growth boundary that would provide you revenue options without incurring sort of a disproportionate level of cost.
And this goes back to what I was commenting on before, when I was talking about difference between city and county. If Kingston wanted to extend the urban growth area out to the Safeway to capture that retail center, everything along the way would need to be zoned as a city. And so then you've created a density pattern where you'll have to figure out how to improve the highway, build a sewer treatment expansion that will be able to serve all the density between their current boundary and Safeway. So there's details that you have to think about when you expand the boundaries. You have to go to this young man.
Thank you very much. I have two questions. One of them about the urban growth boundary, or the city limits. Why could we not have a non-contiguous boundary? I believe Everett and Kent, Polko as well, have non-contiguous sections that are still part of their city, but are not connected in any way to other parts of the city. That's my first question. And then my second question is the city government system going to be a mayoral system, a city council system, a mix of both? If so, how many councilors would there be in that city council?
So the first question to answer is that's just the requirements by law if an area wants to incorporate. Actually, funny enough, Friday Harbor has a non-contiguous area that it serves within its government. But all of those cities incorporated a long time ago, and then laws have changed.
Can you be a little louder and more clear, please?
It's the law. You can't offer a non-contiguous area because that's just what Washington state law states at this time. The second question would be, that would be up to the government, that would be up to the community when they choose to incorporate, if they want to have a mayoral and council or a city manager council, and how many seats they want to have. So it would be up to the community.
Would that have to be in the petition?
Yes.
Whether it was going to be a mayoral setup or, because if people are going to vote on a petition, wouldn't we need to know what is this this animal that you're
proposing? That is actually included in the election process, the form of government that you'd be choosing.
So that would be included in the petition.
Yeah.
It's trickling. I was on the school board for 8 years here, and our taxes are on single family houses are your basic tax that you've got in this area for supporting schools, cities, and things like that. We don't have a Boeing. We don't have a Microsoft. We don't have these big, like Columbia Tower. What do you think the property taxes on Columbia Tower are? Then you compare that to Seattle. You look at the housing, single family housing tax is much lower than here because you've got the big infrastructure. And we haven't been, I've been here 30 years, and I don't see our big infrastructure growing in terms of big businesses. I think the biggest one's Steer over here from Heating. It's the biggest new business we've had in the area. And if you're going to go to a city, you're going to have to be willing to pay the taxes. And suck it up and pay the taxes. And if, Sausalito, they've got multi-million-dollar houses through the whole infrastructure. They can do it, but we don't have that here. So I think you ought to think a little bit about this extra cost that you're going to incur.
The question I have is about sewer stormwater infrastructure. If I understood your summary, you basically just said, well, you'll probably just contract it back to the county and you'll basically be paying about the same as you are now. Did I misunderstand that, or what? Could you clarify that? And then the second piece of this question is, in reality, much of the infrastructure that even our existing urban growth area needs for stormwater and for wastewater is inadequate. It's not fully built out. So there's significant costs that are coming in the next 10 years to actually have the pump stations, the stormwater management that we need. So I'm unclear as to how your analysis is telling us about the cost of those infrastructure components.
Yeah, so we did not capture it in the presentation, but that is in the full report. We speak to the capital projects planned for the area, recent projects completed. We reached out to the county departments for sewage and stormwater, and there's a lot of good information in there pertaining to those things and the costs that an incorporated city would have to kind of face. But we also speak a little bit about revenue sources that we didn't touch on here, real estate, excise tax, things of that nature. So didn't present it, but it is a full report.
But your conclusion is that it's not going to be additional cost to this new city?
No. There would be additional cost of a new city, but it would take different funding mechanisms to kind of focus on the capital projects and infrastructure investments. So this was just focusing on the general government, general fund area, and then the report goes into more depth on capital infrastructure and investment that the new city would have to take care of.
But I just feel like the summary is kind of glossing over the fact that there are additional costs that
yes.
the new city residents are going to have to find to pay.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that in the analysis of this presentation.
I think it was slide 8 or 9, one or two after this, where you talked about the population density. Yeah. So this one, so you talked about whether there was parcels left on the table that could expand revenues without adding to the expenditure side of the ledger. I noticed in this with the color coding thing that the west edges of the UGA seem to be pretty low population. So when someone does the petition thing, they can define the city boundary smaller than the UGA, right? So they could carve out those western edges that have low population densities. That I just want to confirm.
Yeah.
Do I understand that correct?
Yeah, you could. The one thing to keep in mind is the population limits for incorporation. So right now through
and you get further from
June 2028, you have to have 1,500 residents to incorporate. After June 30th of 2028, you have to have more than 3,000 residents to incorporate due to your proximity by air miles to Edmonds.
But it is safe to say that after Arborwood gets built out, we'll hit the 3,000, which is why Kingston's growth percentage is so high. Is because the Arborwood development is included in the UGA numbers.
Hi there. I think on some fundamental level, people just generally want to know if gaining local control is possible without significantly increasing a cost burden on the residents. And in your experience, a town of our size, is that in the realm of possibility of not significant? Like, I think people are scared that, like, okay, now I'm going to be taxed huge. But if have you seen in these other cities how that plays out? You know, whether we end up, we can find a, you know, whether we can make the transition in a way that, you know, doesn't significantly. Costs for residents.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple elements there. So unfortunately, there aren't any other very recent incorporations to look at the success of that, right? Within Washington and the unique conditions that we have for incorporation in Washington. But I mean, from the very high level analysis that we've done, the answer is it's possible, but you have to weigh the level of service that you think that you're going to be able to achieve with that. Are you increasing your level of service with the same tax burden, or are you accepting a slightly lesser level of service with your associated tax burden? And that's a decision that you have to make.
With a level two, like a phase two analysis kind of cover that type of question?
Yeah, it could. I mean, I think that we typically for our purposes, it would be helpful to have a little bit of direction from the community about what do you want to see from your community so that we can model that and project that out. But that absolutely could be something that we can look at.
Thank you very much. I'm Robert J. Smiley, lifetime resident of Kaysville. I was the first environmental planner for Kitsap County in 1974. Okay, and reviewed the impact statement. I was also on a committee of the Puget Sound Council of Governments who established the urban growth boundaries and the function for that. And I've seen Arborbrook when its infancy, it went through three ownerships, and it was approved by the county. And then it was reneged. Olympic Resources or Port and Talbot had a lot of land too. And so we have a lot of open space here. And the reason for those boundaries there is because there's a lot of wetlands that limit building around the area. So I'm not sure you can expand. And the other thing is we're concerned about money markets and chalk. But have you ever considered what is the purpose of this land? Are there people coming to live here or to establish businesses here? What is the potential for growth? Or let's say economic growth. I don't think it's there. I think this is a place for residential living. So we're talking about the cost and increasing the cost or increasing the income potential. I don't think we have that situation. Leavenworth had that problem. And how did they do? They made it a destination. They gave it an identity. We don't have that identity. People catch the ferry and they go to where? That's right. So I think that we're looking at it the wrong way. And the reason why the urban growth boundaries are created is to optimize capital improvements and have density for that. Okay? But anyhow, the waterfront properties don't need the sewers because they have septic systems and land parcels large enough. So the question is, do you want to incorporate or not? If we want to incorporate, we have to do it before this timeline. Otherwise, we have to have 3,000. Okay. So the question you have to answer is, what do you want this community to be like? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's a more important question than the cost. I'll leave it at that.
So I want to thank you. I want to clarify, and I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. When the population hits 3,000, incorporation is legal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay. So currently, you can incorporate today because the legislature lowered the threshold to 1,600. Until 2028, but after 2028, the threshold goes back to 3,000, and Kingston will probably hit that when the next phase of Arborwood is built.
Why did they lower it?
I'm going to go to somebody who hasn't spoken yet.
Have you spoken yet, Dave?
I'm trying to keep it brief, and forgive me, this is more directed at you. The question about population density, the difference between an unincorporated area versus incorporated in the state standards, those are questions that we need to have details into his comments about what we see the community looking like. If we can look at getting that information from your office or a team in the future, it would be a valued part of this conversation.
I think that if people are going to be talking seriously about it and you form a committee and you want to do all that, we can probably pull together people from the planning department of Lake Tulspo and Kitsap County and get, you know, you could bounce ideas and get some facts from the experts. But I don't want to promise that but I think if that's a conversation people want to have, we can help organize that.
I'm kind of new to that, kind of late to the game here to figure out that this is even happening. So my question is, where did the impetus to even start talking about this even come from?
I will say I said that in my intro remarks, but maybe not that clearly. It came from, there's two things. One is under state law, the county is obligated to provide the information to people about how to incorporate. We're not allowed to like hide the ball and say, don't incorporate. We need to present it to you. As your county commissioner for the last 3 years, it is a constant discussion when I'm in Kingston about whether we should incorporate or not incorporate. And then no matter what small group you're in, half don't want to and half are interested. So a couple of years ago, people in Kingston asked, could we get some facts? Because the county's never provided facts to us about what would our tax base be, how much would it cost, et cetera. So that's when we scraped together some dollars and these guys bid on the job. And this is the report that we have. I want to reiterate, the report has a lot of details that folks are looking for. And it's not that long. What is it, 40 pages maybe with maps? You know, it's not hard.
No, it's not.
It's not a slog, I guess I would say. So there is more information online that I think a lot of you are interested in.
It's
online, like,
where are
we?
Yeah. Good one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I take that one?
Yes.
So it is on the commissioner's webpage. If you go to kitsap.gov, you scroll down to departments, find the commissioner's office. If you see the picture of the three commissioners, you're in the right spot. Scroll down. It's under news and announcements. It says, you know, the report's recently been completed. Link to the full report, link to this presentation. And following tonight, we'll have audio up there shortly if anyone wants to listen to this again or share it with their friends and neighbors.
My next one, not sure I understood. So the area that's in the urban growth area, now that you've got outlined there, it becomes the city of, and you talked about 2,400 people. The population of 2,400.
It's 2,600.
26, okay. And that's within, that's how many people live in that area right now?
Today. Or 2025.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And that includes kids.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, we have time for a couple more. Anybody who hasn't asked something that they're...
Okay, you already went, but we'll see if
did
we can
go.
Did you
go? No,
we
she
have...
wanted to.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, I saw a hand over here. Okay.
I am Mike. I'm curious what if Kingston was incorporated, what kind of influence would Kingston have with its Washington State Department of Transportation? Anyways, how are we going to increase the retail if the state's not willing to improve the roadway through our town? And for the 4.3 million people who travel through this town, they don't spend any per capita. Just curious. Question for you.
I don't know if it's a question for these guys. Economic development, right? So,
yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. That is, though, as has been pointed out, that is a way to bring revenue to Kingston, should you incorporate. It's a way to bring revenue to Kitsap County as things get.
Than the county.
With the Department of Transportation.
Yep.
I'm going to say nobody has teeth with the department. I mean, there'd be more loud voices, right? You'd have a mayor, city council, and a county commissioner all yelling at them.
Does an incorporated city have more influence?
No. Not that I've ever seen.
No. Direct channel.
Yeah.
They just add more people.
I actually wanted to just make a statement of being a newbie here, moved here in 2020. I got involved with KCAC, and the question of incorporation has come up many, many times. And so I wanted to thank Commissioner Rolfes and this group for putting together at least the first view of what it means, because I came from Sammamish, where it was crazy going through going from an unincorporated area with King County and then becoming a city, and it ended up not being a good thing. At the end of the day, I think we've heard so much that KCAC, should we be incorporated? And I think this is our first step to look at what does it really mean? What is it going to cost? And all these questions everyone's asked tonight or comments they've made is exactly why we need to do this study. And should we do another study? I don't know. You know, that's something that we all as a city, or excuse me, is it need to think about. So again, I want to thank you for doing this and stirring the all the questions that we can be talking about here tonight.
Thank you.
Do we want to wrap this? Wait, I think we ended on applause. I think that we're in a position to wrap it up, and we'll stay here and people can ask questions here. And if you all want to organize, that's your business. But we'll stick around and get the chairs cleaned up and answer questions. All right, just say thank you everyone for coming.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry,
exactly. No, okay.